Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert the Tech Doctor, and I think out there somewhere in the ether is Allison Hartley. Are you there, Allison?
I am here, and I am finally unpacked from moving enough to unearth my better Audio Technica microphone, so I'm sure y'all will be pleased that I sound marginally better today, hopefully.
Oh, you just sound marvelous.
Ah, thank you.
And the dog's doing well?
He is doing real well. He's laying right here beside me, fast asleep.
Good deal.
Hopefully he'll stay that way until we're done recording.
That would be nice, but you never know what those dogs might do. Well, today we're going to follow up a bit with the discussion that we began last week when we started talking about Keyboard Maestro and macros, and we were fortunate enough to get the man who created a bunch of these fabulous macros that work with Keyboard Maestro. His name is Keith Watson, and Keith, want to welcome you to the podcast and ask you please to say hi to everyone and tell us just a little bit about yourself, if you will.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for having me. I appreciate your kind words. I lost my vision due to RP, and which was a very slow progression. A little history about myself. I was an electronics engineering technician, and loved laying out printed circuit boards and everything, and slowly got into programming as my vision deteriorated, and actually went back to school and got a degree in MIS. Graduated in 2005 with that degree, but had been working for the IT department at my company for a while pursuing that degree. And all throughout that time had been learning self-teaching myself programming and scripting, C, C++, and specifically Python. That was my flavor of choice. All this was done on Unix boxes and HP UX and Linux boxes. So when I finally jumped ship and came over to the light side in 2009, I got my first, what do they call it these days when you get your iPhone and then the entry gateway drug? I got my first iPhone in the 3GS in 2009, and that was all she wrote. I'm totally Mac from then on.
Well, it's not too big of a jump to go from Linux to the Mac, so I guess you would feel pretty comfortable with that environment.
Yeah, it is. They're both underlying UX type systems, so you know, and that's what I love about the Mac is that I have the best of both worlds. I've got the GUI. Can play in there as much as I want. And then I've also got the console. So most of all my stuff that I've written over the years still works with that. So that's kind of where I'm at.
All right. So really this idea of taking macros and adding scripts that can do various things on the Mac when you press a key is not a completely new thing for you, at least in the sense that you do sort of have a programming background, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yes and no. I kind of hesitate to call myself a programmer because I've never really been involved in any huge projects and written any mainstream coding. But yeah, I've done quite a bit with Python and so on. But I've always kind of migrated towards having my systems do the things that I want them to do and not the way that other people want me to have them done.
Have you found that much of an issue on the Apple devices, given that a lot of people would argue that, well, Apple's a pretty closed system, it's a walled garden, you have to do it Apple's way. Does that bother you very much?
Fundamentally, maybe, but not realistically. My dad kind of raised me that there was always the right tool for the right job. You know, if we were working on a vehicle and we didn't have a particular type of wrench or something, we would go down to the hardware store or the auto store and buy that particular tool. So from that, I just have always been of the mind that, you know, if it gets the job done and you can get the job done the way it needs to get done, then whether it be Linux, Windows, HP UX, or Solaris, or Apple, any of the tools to get the task completed is what is where I'm at, basically.
So really, I gather that you feel like with Apple the way it is, and the tools that are available, you have a fair amount of freedom or autonomy to do the kinds of things that you want it to do.
In Apple's OS X, yes. On their iOS platforms, I'm perfectly happy staying behind that little walled garden. I did jailbreak my phone once, scared the hell out of me when it didn't come back up the way I thought it was supposed to come back up, but finally got that situated. Thought I bricked it, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I played with it for a while and it was okay. And I kind of thought to myself, you know, I really, and this is one of the reasons I kind of migrated away from a full up Linux environment, is that I just got tired of having to work to get something done. There was a Linux distribution called Gentoo that every time they updated it, I had to basically recompile my printer drivers in order to print a little document, whatever, you know. So coming home from work at night, having to go through all that, and then just to print something, I was, it just frustrated me. So I love their OS X. I'm, you know, sandboxing is a good thing for the masses, but at least I'm still able to play outside of the sandbox.
Yeah.
Well, I know you've done some of those things, Allison, in terms of the jailbreaking and all. Did you have a similar experience?
I never had an experience where stuff didn't come up the way it should. I guess for me, it's been more of a change of mindset, in that I feel that since iOS has matured, I have not seen as many reasons with subsequent versions of iOS to jailbreak, because a lot of the features for which I was jailbreaking in iOS, say, 4 through 6, are now available in iOS 7. And I assume we're going to see, hopefully, a little bit more openness. Maybe. It's always hard to say in iOS 8. It's just been, there's been less and less of a reason as the operating system has matured. So I just figure it's not worth compromising the integrity and security of my system to do a few little things that, yeah, may be cool, but how much would I really use them? Because I depend on my iPhone, especially now, to do so much, including, you know, sensitive things like banking and credit card payments and stuff. I have no desire to compromise the security of those systems, because once your identity gets stolen, it's a heck of a time getting it back.
Well, I think it's a good point. And I pretty much am where you are with that, is that I don't really have the need to jailbreak. And I agree there is less of a need, perhaps, with more features being added to iOS. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me to do it, although I do hear some people who have jailbroken using some different voices and things like that on iOS. So there are some different things you can do, but it's not really worth it to me.
Yeah, you can, but why?
The main reason that I considered jailbreaking was back, I think it was iOS. It was the iOS that was on the 3GS. And before they allowed your ringtones, you know, coming from my Nokia, being able to put my own ringtones on there, I was able to, you know, I wanted those back, you know, my own personalized system. So
that would be more of motivation to do it, something that you really wanted that you couldn't get to.
Right, right. And then once they allowed that, you know, to have you put your own ringtones on there, that was the reason I never went back to jailbreaking. I'm like, oh, I'm done. I'm good with everything else.
Well, you know, I had a sort of a similar experience when I did a test of Android last year. I bought a Nexus 7 and put it through its paces for a while and podcasted about it. And it was cool in a way to be able to customize it in various ways. But I found that I spent more time trying to get it to do things than actually being productive with it. And that was the problem I had with it. It seems like, you know, in a way, jailbreaking is kind of similar to that.
Right, right. As well as, I mean, and that was, like I said, my whole motivation for moving towards the OS X platform was that I no longer had to worry about doing that. I could become productive rather than hacking.
Speaking of being productive, we talked a little bit in the last podcast about something that you've done with a utility called Keyboard Maestro, where you've created some pretty useful and pretty unique macros that actually output their output to speech. So they're great for a voiceover user. How did you get the idea to add Keyboard Maestro as a tool to your arsenal and then to further go from there to create these macros?
Well, it actually came about almost 180 degrees from what you just said. I had the macros, the Apple scripting, and was using those in conjunction with VoiceOver's Keyboard Commander. Unfortunately, Keyboard Commander will only let you use the right option key or any other single key that you specify for your hotkey. So it really came out of a frustration using the right option and trying to hit P or a capital P at the same time is just, you know, going through a whole bunch of yoga exercises with your fingers. It just doesn't work. So it was really self-defense that I went out looking for a solution to that and had, you know, over the years heard about these applications like Keyboard Maestro and Launch Bar and all these other things from some of the podcasts that I listened to. And one day I just decided, well, let me give this Keyboard Maestro a try. She was mostly accessible. It was, you know, I fuddled my way through it, kind of got where I needed to be, created a few macros. And most of the things were related to buttons, as usual. Most developers don't label their buttons or just too lazy to do it. I'm not sure why they don't. My buddy Scott and I, we reached out to Peter, the developer. It just so happened that he had gone into a beta cycle and asked if we would like to join and give him any, you know, suggestions that might assist in getting VoiceOver compatible with his product. And, you know, he really went all out with the endeavor. You know, there were areas that the scroll areas weren't working correctly. You could kind of get through them, but they just weren't very friendly. Because he's done a few things that are a little not the Apple's human interface guidelines way of doing things. For instance, in the macro scroll area, if you go in there, you just see the name of the macro and the key. Well, generally, that's supposed to be, it is actually a group. So you can actually interact with that and read through the three elements. But unless you kind of fumble onto that, you won't see that. So, you know, he's done a few things that have made it much more pleasurable for us to interact with his software.
So has he had to make those non-standard items more standard, or has he done it some other way?
No, actually, they're standard items. They're scroll areas, but the way that you can add these classes and have VoiceOver interact with the scroll areas, apparently the developer can utilize it in various ways.
Point is that he's yet another developer who has really gone the extra mile, it sounds like, to make his application work well with VoiceOver.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, I'll send you the link, but he blogged about the process that that he went through. Yeah. And so we can, you know, point other developers to his trials, so to speak.
Excellent. I'll post that link in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And shortly after you and your friend Scott did the Apple Viz podcast on Keyboard Maestro, I went ahead and got it and installed it, and it that all went pretty well for me. I did talk with you a couple times and worked a couple kinks out as far as getting it all up and running. But you just installed it yesterday, Allison, and just tell us a little bit about what was your experience like as far as trying to figure it out and make use of it and all that. How did it go for you yesterday?
Well, it's been pretty good. Thank heaven I had you to help me get it. So the few little initial setup things taken care of, I would have broken it irrevocably because I'm one of these plow through and just try to do things type of people when it comes to the computer. And sometimes that means I succeed and sometimes it means I fail epically. Robert helped me keep from failing epically this time. But yeah, it's been really cool. It's one of those things where I never really thought before Robert demonstrated these macros and before I listened to your AppleVis podcast, I didn't really think I needed macros. I didn't really see what the what purpose they would serve and how they would make my workflow and finding out information on the Mac a little bit more efficient. But now, especially like the battery status ones and everything and the weather and the time, I'm using those constantly, to figure out, you know, how much battery life do I have left? It's so much easier than going into the extras menu and pushing on the battery menu and finding out. It's just, it's amazing. I'm really, really pleased. And I could see myself someday working to maybe make a few little macros when I get a free moment or day to do that. And it's been a great experience so far. And I'm really thankful that you've developed these because they're really helpful.
Oh, well, thank you. It's addicting, I'll tell you that. I'm, I'm always looking, you know, for processes that, that I do repetitively and can streamline by using a macro to do it.
Allison's done a nice job of kind of setting this up. What these macros really are useful for is doing repetitive tasks or tasks that you could do much more quickly by just issuing a keystroke and having some actions take place. That's really what this is all about. So what they do is, I think, make us able to work a lot more efficiently. And I guess that was your hope or your goal pretty much, Keith, in addition to giving you more possibilities than you could just get through using the keyboard commander from VoiceOver?
Yes, that's exactly right. I'm more than willing to share, like I told you or said to anybody on the podcast. If I can share these and make somebody's life a little easier, hey, I'm more than happy to do it.
How should people go about getting them or finding out how to get them if they do would like to try them out?
Well, I'm going to accuse Allison of prompting me to do something that it's taken me a really long time to do and that I've never really had a need to do until now. I finally bought a domain, and the domain name that I chose was insanelypractical.com. So there are a few reasons for that. One being that having drunk the Kool-Aid and been a Mac convert and jumped in feet first, I kind of took after Steve's insanely great statement. So I use that. And then I am dyslexic, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt. Practically insane. Get it?
I think we're all practically insane.
So, it's out there now. Insanelypractical.com will get you to the site. The contact information is there, as well as I've got the link to the Keyboard Maestros. The link will send you to an index page with just a list of all the macros. So you got to go to each one, and rather than click on it, you've got to VO Shift M right click on it and say download.
So just to be clear for people, to use the macros, you do have to first purchase and install Keyboard Maestro.
That's correct.
And the installation has a couple of things that you need to watch out for. So I don't know. I don't know what you think about this, Allison, just having done it, but it might be helpful for one of us, you know, to help you walk through it, or perhaps we could write something up that kind of
like a beginner's guide. That would be really helpful for people, I think, because I know I if I didn't have you to walk me through it, I would have needed something like that.
What do you think about that, Keith? Do you think something like that is needed?
Probably. I tend to take that kind of stuff for granted. It's like, well, it's in my head, it's pretty much straightforward, but I kind of forget that I am at a little more advanced level of installations and maintenance of this kind of thing. So, yeah, I agree. Some kind of a installation guide like that would be good for the community.
Yeah, there's not a lot that's needed, but there...
Not a ton, but there's enough that even me as a professed power user, you know, it was good to have somebody who had done it walk me through it.
Just to whet people's appetite a little more, what are some of the things that you're doing with these macros right now?
I really did it as a dashboard kind of thing. That's what started it, and then it kind of evolved from there. But initially, I started with things like weather, time, and we talked about one that you mentioned was caffeine. I had it installed and found that it wasn't accessible and was kind of disappointed. And then one day I was actually going through looking at the AppleScript dictionary for another macro that I was working on, or AppleScript that I was working on, and just happened to see that they had an entry in the dictionary for caffeine, and was able to, from there, go and say, oh, okay, well, let me see what I can do with this. And that led to first getting its state. This is one of the nice things about AppleScript. It's very human readable. So you do things like tell application, caffeine, get state, or it's not state. I can't recall what it is exactly at this point, but tell application caffeine turn on. So, you know, with a little bit of logic in there, you can look at the state, and then depending on what the state is, you can go through and turn her on or turn her off, and then have that spoken back to you.
Okay, so just to refresh people's memory a little bit, caffeine is an app that sits in the extras menu bar, and it's just an icon that will change depending on whether it's on or off, and its purpose is to keep your Mac from going to sleep. So if you turn on caffeine and your little cup icon fills up, then caffeine will keep the computer awake no matter what your settings are set to in system preferences. But if you turn it off, then your settings will come back and your computer will go to sleep according to whatever settings you have set. The problem was that this is a very nice little quick way to get your computer to stay awake if you're recording a podcast or downloading files or whatever. But it wasn't accessible to VoiceOver because it was just an icon. And the real power here is that you were able to take an Apple script and actually manipulate the state of caffeine on or off and have that state reported in an audio format that we can hear, you know, if we query the macro.
Caffeine is enabled.
Like that, we can tell that it's currently enabled. And so that is one thing that is really neat, is that this wasn't accessible until you created this macro. But just to help people understand a little more, part of the macro is an Apple script. So Apple scripting is something that Apple offers on these machines if you want to do some custom things. Is that the purpose behind it?
Exactly. I mean, there's a host and a slew of things that you can do with Apple script, as well as Automator. Keyboard Maestro will accommodate both, as well as Python scripts, Perl, Ruby, all any kind of scripting. It's mainly kind of a front end for running these types of scripts, as well as it has the built-in functionality to do a lot of this stuff on its own. He's got over 200 actions in there, but you can do things like fill form fields on websites, all kind of things. Just from taking the Apple script that I had created and used with VoiceOver, the VoiceOver keys, I kind of migrated it into, it was easy enough to migrate into Keyboard Maestro just by dropping it in, and it worked.
So Keyboard Maestro can do a lot of things on its own without Apple scripting, if I understand it right. But if you want to do some more customized, maybe some more powerful things, you might need to use something like Apple script to do that.
Yes, that's exactly right. And you can get very, very complicated with this stuff. I've got a friend of mine who has been a VI user, VI user for years and years and years. And unfortunately, the OS version of VI is not accessible. And it really frustrates him since he's purchased a Mac. So he's actually using Keyboard Maestro to have text edit act like VI.
Wow. So it's really, that's really pushing it.
Yeah. He's really pushing the envelope there. I mean, he's going in and creating all kind of different editing modes and just really, cause his fingers know, I mean, he's been writing code and programming and using VI so long that he just, that's his editor of choice. And it frustrated him that he could not get an accessible version, GUI version of it. So he's making text edit become VI.
So, you know, one question that I think people might have is, well, this all sounds really cool and it's neat that you're able to make something accessible that wasn't accessible before and all that. But is this kind of thing with Keyboard Maestro and Apple Scripts and all, is it too geeky for the average person? I mean, a lot of people listening to this podcast would probably want to jump into it, but would most people who are just more casual users want to bother with Keyboard Maestro and macros and things like that?
As far as the geeky aspect of it, you can get as deep into it as you want. Like I said, it's almost a gateway drug to productivity because you start doing things like Allison said, with the weather and the time being right there at your fingertips, then just kind of progressively get into more and more advanced topics. And that's how I did it. When I bought my Apple 4 years ago, I had no clue what AppleScript was, but through just Google Foo and reading some books from Bookshare, I was able to begin to learn scripting. And having a background in logic and coding, it made it a little easier, yes, but it's not terribly complicated. There's a lot of books out there that give you examples, and that's how I do it. I go out and I'll find an example of something I want to do, or similar to something that I want to do, and then modify it to meet my needs.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've just looked at some of your macros and looked at the language in the Apple Scripts, and it seems pretty straightforward that most of us could figure it out. But the point is, you know, what I discovered was that you've given everyone a real head start with these macros, because really you can, just to start with, just install Keyboard Maestro, get through that little process we talked about, and then import any of these macros that Keith has written and is making available that you want to do various things. And that's all you have to do until you're ready to dig into it more. They just work from that point on when you press the hotkey. So it does seem like in that sense, if you just want to take it that far, you wouldn't have to dig into it very much.
Exactly. It's a relatively inexpensive dashboard, basically. You know, with the discount that Peter's given us through AppleViz, it's not that expensive. And using, you know, I'm glad to share, like I said, and what I've done. And there's more to come. I'm always writing, so, you know, just check back every now and again and see if there's anything new. I, you know, do suggest that if you're interested in it, to do some Googling, and there are websites out there that will take you through the basics of Apple scripting, as well as any other kind of coding you want to do, or you know, script creation, that kind of thing. It's interesting and adds productivity to your day. So that's where I came from.
Yeah, and you mentioned that there are some Bookshare books, which of course would be accessible. The Keyboard Maestro manual is accessible.
Yes.
So there's quite a bit of information out there.
I can't wait to jump in and start trying to create macros. It's going to be fun. My inner geek is doing backflips. So.
Inner geek doing backflips. Well, I look forward to see what you create. I think it'll be interesting.
It'll change the world, at least my world, in some way. So.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Keith, I want to thank you very much for you taking your time to come on the podcast and flesh this out a little more. It's nice to get a little more info on how this works and what the possibilities are. And I know from discussions with you off the podcast that we have some other things I want to have you back to talk about in the near future. But I think we'll call this one to a halt here now and not flood people with too much information. But I just want to say thank you so much for taking your time to come and talk with us about all this.
Yeah, thanks, Keith.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me. It's always a pleasure to share. I'm always here. I'll answer any questions, any problems anybody has. I'm more than willing to help.
Yeah, that's one thing that I know. You've been very gracious with me to answer my questions, and it's been great to sort of make a new friend in you and enjoy the times that we've been chatting and communicating back and forth with text message and all. So Keith is really a man of his word. If he can help, he'll do it. At least that's been my experience. So thanks for doing this, and we do appreciate it. If you guys who are listening have questions or want some information, Keith, is there a good way for someone to get in touch with you other than the website that you already mentioned, or is that the main way you'd like people to do it?
Well, my contact information is on there, but I'll go ahead and give it. It's tkwatson63@gmail.com, and my Twitter is tkeithwatson.
Okay, great. All right. Well, and if you guys want to contact Allison and me, please feel free to send an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@drcarter.com. And before you know it, we'll be back with something else. But for now, this is Robert the Tech Doctor. I'll say so long.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.